meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedure Subteam Track 1, Overall Process Support and Outreach Issue, held on the 25th of April, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Sarah Bakke. Please begin.
Yes, this is Sarah Bakke. Thank you all for joining us this evening, or morning or afternoon, wherever it is where you are located. This is Work Track 1, and let's start off by going over our agenda for this evening, or I'm sorry, for today. So we're going to have our welcome and agenda overview, which is, as usual, we'll cover statements of use. We're going to also discuss the RSP program. If we have time, we'll get to additional discussions on costing and then any other business. Before we get started, does anyone have anything in particular that they would like to raise during any other business? Not seeing any hands. Well, I'll assume there is none. Does anyone have an update to the SOIs? Not seeing any hands. Not hearing anyone on the bridge. I guess I should have asked if anyone is strictly on the bridge and not in Adobe as well. Okay, not hearing anything, so I assume we're all good. With that, I believe we can get started. Let's see. There's the slide. I don't know if y'all could see it before. I could not. Jeff, I have a question for you. Were you wanting us to work from this slide regarding the RSP program, or were you wanting to work from the other document?
This is Jeff. I think it might be easier to work from the document.
Okay. Staff, could you bring up the Google Docs? So what we are going to be looking at this evening was some draft requirements or principles that might apply to an RSP program if one was to be created. Everyone see that okay? Make it bigger for my eyes. All right, so I will read through the problem statements, and then Jeff, I don't know where you'd like to jump in here. I know you are potentially looking to assist with this, but I'll just get started and you just raise your hand when you're ready to throw your hat in. So the problem statements that we are looking to address is the new GTLD technical evaluation and pre-delegation testing processes were repetitive, resource-intensive, unnecessarily expensive, and inefficient. Additionally, the cost of the technical evaluations were borne by new GTLD applicants, front-end registry operators, as opposed to the actual technical registry service providers. Third, applicants were required to select, and in some cases pay for, back-end registry services, or back-end registry service providers prior to knowing whether those providers would pass the ICANN technical evaluation And finally, multiple evaluations of the same registry service provider by different evaluators led to inconsistent evaluation results despite presenting the exact same technical registry solution. So we've had some discussions regarding potential requirements before. We've touched on some of these principles during our prior discussions regarding some of these problems that were just listed and potential requirements. One of the main requirements or principles would be security and stability of the GTLDs. These must not be negatively impacted and preferably improved. Based on that, one of the principles that we could potentially put forward as a requirement would be that applicants or applicant providers must be able to demonstrate technical capability equal to or greater than the 2012 round of the new GTLD program. The evaluation of a registry service provider should account for the number of GTLDs it supports with respect to the five critical services it provides, being DNS, SRS, WHOIS, DNSSEC, and Data Escrow. And finally, service levels for registry service providers must be equal to or greater than the 2012 round of the new GTLD program. So I'm going to stop here and see if there are any questions, if people have any comments, if you think that these would be good principles or requirements for a potential program. Do you have additional items that you think should be included? Do these not really hit the mark? Do you have something different in mind? I'll open the floor to see if anyone has any comments. And I'll see if Jeff has any comments as well. Very quiet. Oh, there's Donna. Hi, Donna. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Sarah. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. So obviously, well, maybe not obviously, maybe others have seen this document, but this is the first time I've seen this document, so I will need some time to understand it more fully and go over it. But in relation to the security and stability of GTLDs, what's the difference between applicants must be able to demonstrate technical capability and service levels for registry service providers must be equal to or greater than the 2012 round? So is the first one to do with establishing the capability of the RSP and the second is related to the service levels contained in the registry agreement?
Jeff, I see you have your hand up. I presume you're going to answer Donna.
Yes, this is Jeff Newman. I'll provide an answer. The way I look at it is I think the way you pretty much said it, Donna, which is that some of the technical requirements may not necessarily translate into specific service levels. So, one of the requirements in the technical questions was for essentially a backup plan or registry failure capabilities provides for other technical aspects that are not necessarily measured by service level. And so you have, like, following the IDN guidelines, and you have a whole bunch of other things. So I think the way you said it is there are differences between making sure that someone lives up to specific service levels in the agreement and evaluating their technical capabilities. There are subtle differences there. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. And Steve, I see you have your hand up as well. You can go ahead.
Thanks, Sarah. This is Steve Chan from Staffin. What I wanted to do is try to provide a little context of why this document is created and why we're looking at it today. So the thought was in relation to, so I guess last week we were looking at actual proposals, and what staff and the leadership thought might be useful is to try and get to an agreement on a set of principles and requirements regarding an RSV program that we could all agree upon, and then, well, hopefully, and then the thought would be that those would inspire the development of actually a solution, or as we already have a couple solutions that are that we've looked at, we could also see if those existing solutions are right sized to the requirements that the work stack has agreed upon. So again, I just wanted to provide context of why this was created, and apologies for it not having been shared ahead of time, actually. But like I said, just context. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Steve. Yes, and apologies for not making that clearer as well. As you saw earlier, Kristen and I had planned on working from some slides that were different from this document, and so we weren't sure that it was going to be shared ourselves or not. So, going on to the next point, one of the potential requirements, I guess, if we could post a link to this document, that would probably be really great, and that if people can go back and look at it after the call or during the call and make notes if they'd like. So the next potential requirement or potential principle would be efficiency and evaluation and pre-delegation for ICANN applicants and RSPs must be improved. Coordination between ICANN and RSPs should be improved. Burden on RSPs and applicants must be reduced. Overall costs for ICANN evaluations and pre-delegation testing should be reduced. So, again, just looking to improve some efficiencies there. As I was not part of the last round, I'm not sure if some of this happened during the process itself or if this is something new that would need to be addressed. Donna, I see you had your hand up. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Sarah. Donna Austin. Just a couple of high-level comments, I suppose. I think we need to be really specific about what it is, you know, problem statements as it relates to provision of, you know, back-end registry services, draft requirements, principles for an RSP program, because otherwise it's a little bit hard to put some of this stuff in a context. And just an initial read, I think some of these things are, you know, I could interpret them as problem statements rather than, you know, requirements or principles. So I think it will take a little bit of time, certainly speaking personally, for me to kind of go through this and pull it apart to some extent and to make sure that I understand what the intent of it is. So it's just feedback at a very high level based on an initial quick read of it. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, Donna. That's a very valid point. And this is by no means close to a final document. This is just something that we were putting out there to sort of spur discussion and see if we could drive the discussion, I guess, in a direction. So this is definitely a draft and just sort of a springboard, and we'll definitely let everyone have time to digest and comment and change and have probably several reiterations of this before we get anywhere close to a document that we all agree on. So I'm just looking at the chat to see. And I see a comment from Donna. I appreciate that, Sarah. I hope my comments aren't being taken as being critical, but just some general observations at this point. No, not looking at it being critical at all, Donna. I completely understand where you're coming from, so thank you for your input. The next potential requirement or statement is evaluation and pre-delegation testing must be consistent, predictable, and to the extent possible, objective. I think those are some, sorry about my scrolling, going crazy, some ideas that have been mentioned before as far as predictability. Additionally, let's see, we have costs associated with evaluation and testing of an RSP should be borne by the RSP as opposed to the applicant, where the applicant and the RSP are not the same entity. Next, RSPs must be able to innovate and differentiate themselves. Again, that's, I think, a common thread that has come up before. Applicants must be able, or must not be prohibited from serving as its own registry service provider. An RSP program should be designed in such a manner as to not adversely impact ICANN's liability. ICANN must have access to a list of registry service providers that have been pre-approved to the RSP program. Pre-approval of RSPs could be done in such a way as to take into account the capacity of such RSPs, the type of PLDs they support, and the services they provide. Applicants must not be required to select a pre-approved RSP. It shall be able to either propose providing its own registry services or selecting a new RSP. If that occurs, such new RSP must be evaluated prior to the ultimate selection of the applicant to manage one or more specific TLEs. Do you have any comments at this point? It's a pretty quiet crowd this evening. I see a few people typing. Jeff has said that last bullet is a long way of saying it's a voluntary program. And then Jim Pendergrass has said the cost point is something that's going to be discussed more. I think this group should dictate that if two parties want to negotiate it or an RSP wants to offer that, that's a differentiator in the marketplace, but it's not the role of the group to dictate that. A very good point, Jim.
Sarah, can I jump in for a sec?
Of course.
This goes just for the record. I think maybe just taking a bit of a step back in our original kind of idea for tonight, I think it was more to, this was a document to kind of flesh out some ideas and make it as a kind of foundation for us to move forward on. And what was kind of, like, I think our idea was to get everyone to kind of start here and then add conversation on it. Hopefully everyone understands that was the intent on it, and then hopefully we can add more to it so then the next calls we move further down the line. Thanks.
Yes, thank you, Krista. Jeff, I see you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Thanks. I just wanted to offer a little bit different view than Jim has on it. I'm not sure that I think one of the problems that we heard on a number of occasions was that applicants were not in a position in a lot of cases to, quote, negotiate with RFPs because it operated from a lack of knowledge, and it also was put in situations where it was that applicants were not positive that the RFPs that it had selected, even if they were the biggest legacy providers, were not 100% sure that the RFPs that they selected would pass the initial evaluation or have to go into extended evaluation and have to pay additional costs. And so we heard from a number of applicants, especially I think it was the brand registry group, that said that they would prefer it if the RFPs were pre-approved so that they didn't have to bear the cost of evaluating a separate entity. So I hear what Jim's saying, and perhaps maybe we just label this one as for discussion, which we did for a couple of the ones towards the end, and just, you know, make sure that, as Jim said, we have more discussion on it and come back to it. So if we can label that one, quote, for discussion, that would be great. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. And Donna, I see you have your hand raised again. You can go ahead and speak.
Thanks, Sarah. Donna Austin. So just on the cost issue, I think potentially what we're talking about here is two separate issues. So if we assume that there would be some kind of pre-approval of an RSP before another round, then I think costs associated with the evaluation and testing is probably valid that it be borne by the RSP. But any relationship that the RSP enters into with a potential applicant or, as it might turn out, a registry operator is a separate discussion and one that happens between those two entities and one that ICANN is not a party to. So, Jim, I'm not sure if that's the cost that you're talking about there. So the cost of, you know, that the RSP the relationship that the RSP has with the registry operator is going to be different and a different set of circumstances to any process that the RSP goes through potentially with ICANN or some other entity to be pre-approved as an RSP for any future round. So I think there might be a bit of conflation there in terms of the costs associated with the evaluation and the costs associated with the registry operator engaging an RSP at a future date. I'm not sure whether that's what you were getting at, Jim, but perhaps they are two separate sets of costs that we're talking about.
Thank you, Donna. And I think Jim is on a cell phone this evening, which may make it difficult for him to respond. I see Jeff typing in chat. Apologies, it's taking me so long to get off mute. I don't know why it's not unmuting when I click on it. Jeff has said, I think that's right, Donna, not to govern the relationship between the RSP and RO, rather who pays for the cost of technical evaluation if there is a pre-approval process. So thank you, Jeff, for that comment. Donna, I see your hand is raised again. You can go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. I know that Jim's put in chat that, you know, that probably warrants some clarification, and I think that's one of the points that I was trying to get across with my original observation is that, you know, I really think in terms of drafting these initial requirements or principles, we really have to be specific about who we're talking to. So, you know, there's potentially ICANN, the applicant, and any potential RSP, and I think we need to be really specific when we're talking about potential relationships, who we're actually talking about, and when we talk about evaluation, is it for the RSP or is it part of the applicant's responsibility? So I think there is some confusion around what some of these draft requirements or principles relate to, or who they actually relate to. And Jeff, if you're suggesting at the end of this that the last dot point is a long-winded saying that this is a voluntary program, then I would say that it's not really clear to me that what we're talking about here is an RSP program in the context of what we've been talking about previously. So I'm a little bit confused by this document. I understand it's a starting point for a conversation, so it would be good to hear from others, I suppose, to see how others feel about it. Thanks.
Thank you, Donna. So it doesn't look like we have any further discussions here, and we need to do a little more work on this RSP idea and give folks a chance to review this document and digest it some. So why don't we, I don't see any more hands raised and there's not really any chat. Let's go ahead and have staff bring up the PowerPoint document. Jeff, I see your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. There were a couple other points. I'm not sure, Steve, if they just got taken out, but there were points I thought that were in the other document that said for discussion. And I kind of thought we would go over those, at least for what they were, so that we could know that these are two items. If you go to the actual Google Doc, there's two more principles two more principles or requirements or whatever we want to call them that I put in kind of as a for discussion item, which is RSPs, and then it put in parentheses either should or should not, and we need to discuss which one it would be subject to additional contractual terms and conditions with ICANN. I know that we've had many discussions where people have said they should not, and if that's the case, then great, let's just make that solid requirement. And then the second item I have for discussion is that RSPs that provide back-end registry services for then-currently delegated PLDs should be deemed to be pre-approved for subsequent procedures for similarly situated new PLDs. And the point of that was the discussion that we had about grandfathering in existing operators if they want to operate similar types of PLDs. Those were two other points that are you'll see in the Google Doc that are labeled for discussion, because I'm not sure we arrived at a decision on those. Thanks.
You're speaking, Donna. We can't hear you.
I'm sorry. I wasn't speaking. I was waiting for you to ask me to speak. Thanks, Sarah. So, Jeff, just on this for discussion, RSPs that provide back-end registry services for then currently delegated TLDs should be deemed to be pre-approved for subsequent procedures for similarly situated new GTLDs. That's a very long-winded sentence, and it's really one that's difficult to understand. In my, you know, proposal that I put forward, I actually broke this down into pre-approved, proven providers. So that, and the proven category basically made the statement that any RSP that had been through the 2012 round and had been operating, you know, since that time, that they be not required to undergo any further testing or anything like that. So, I mean, if that last discussion point is about grandfathering in those that were approved under the 2012 round, can we simply say that? Because the way it's written now, it's really difficult for me to understand what we're trying to get at. So if there's another way to put that, that would be greatly appreciated. Thanks.
Thank you, Donna. And I see Jim has made a comment in the chat saying, I'll elaborate more in Google Docs on the last point, but the fact that ICANN has had instances of a few operators failing SLAs and having to coach into compliance makes it difficult to automatically grandfather them in. And Justine has said, agree with Donna, also subject to any changes in technical requirements for operating an RSP. I see Donna is now typing. Just waiting to see if anyone else has a... Steve, you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Sarah. This is Steve Chan from staff, and I would note that Jeff is trying to work his way back. What I want to mention is, I guess, maybe an explanation why the wording is slightly wonky and oddly phrased in some cases. I can't take direct credit for that because some of this writing is Jeff's, but the context is that we're trying to get to a place where we have agreed upon requirements and principles without assuming a... So that's why we don't necessarily get to direct wording. Maybe that's the wrong approach, but to the extent it's oddly phrased, that's partly an explanation why we're trying to get to the actual principle and not assume a solution.
Thank you, Steve. Jeff, I see you're back into the Adobe and you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry, I somehow got frozen out. But just wanted to respond to Donna quickly. Yes, it was long and convoluted, and sometimes I am guilty of that, so sorry. But it wasn't just an automatic grandfathering that I wanted to put in. It was really that, you know, you may have some existing RSPs that may have the capacity to handle what they currently have, but may not be able to handle additional TLDs or additional different types of TLDs. I wanted to leave some room in there for potentially to say, well, yes, you might be grandfathered in because currently you support only single registrant TLDs, brands, but you don't actually support any open TLDs, and to the extent that you're going to do open TLDs, we might need to do some additional evaluation, I guess was kind of the opening I was leaving, rather than just saying if you passed evaluation in 2012, you're automatically grandfathered in. That was it. It was, and I'm not saying we necessarily agree with that. I'm just saying that that's kind of the wiggle room or the flexibility I wanted to kind of leave in by wording it that way. But if you can improve the wording, by all means, yes, please. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. And I see that Justin has made a note, so we need to address scalability, Jeff. Donna, I see you have your hand raised. You can please go ahead.
Thanks, Sarah, Donna Austin. And, Jeff, thanks for that explanation. And I would note that I think I agree with Justine is that perhaps that point goes to scalability. But if one of the principles is that evaluation and pre-delegation testing must be consistent, predictable, and to the extent possible objective, you know, you're going to run into the problem that you're describing in that last discussion point for those that go through any future testing, because you know, I don't know whether we've had this conversation within this group, but it's very difficult to assess the ability of an RSP to scale based on the testing you do to understand their technical capability. So I think, you know, one of the things that the registry stakeholder group is suggesting in the responses to community comment 2 as it relates to RSP questions is that the scalability question is something that has to be answered after the fact. So once you know how many TLDs an RSP is taking on, perhaps there's another test that has to come in related to domains under management or TLDs under management, or perhaps there's another test that has to be done on an annual basis to make sure that the RSP does actually have the capability to manage the number of TLDs under management. So I think that the tests that you do for pre-approval of a RSP is going to be different to stating whether they can actually serve the number of TLDs that they intend to. So I think we have a little bit of a chicken and egg problem there. So I think to the extent we can identify what we're going to do, what kind of testing is required before to enable an RSP to be approved in some way, and then perhaps, you know, what other testing will be required further down the testing's the wrong word, but what other process is required further down the track to make sure that they're maintaining a certain level of service is a different conversation, I think. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, Donna. Aubrey, I see your hand is raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you. Aubrey speaking. Hopefully I can be heard. I had some problems before with mics. I guess I'm taking a slightly different view, and this is completely without any hats on, at the whole issue of the grandfathering. As we're evolving in all of this, we're starting to get different types of or possibly different types of TLD, different types of operations. We have the scalability issue. Now, when Don explained it, the scalability came as a later condition, but it's quite possible that while conceiving of the process that an RSP goes through to get its whatever, that can actually be done with scaling in mind. You know, perhaps ranges of how many, you know, clients do you intend to take on. I don't know that we've thought through, and perhaps that's a completely nonsense idea, but I don't think we've actually thought through the process that would need to happen, and I think the problem with grandfathering is that it does not put the existing through whatever other kinds of of process checking that we'll have. And it also, I think, misses a point of, for applicants, for GTLD applicants, for, you know, registry operators, they don't have an equal view of all the RSPs that they're facing. And so in terms of predictability, in terms of knowing that everybody that's coming to you to be an RSP has gone through the same process, it is perhaps a good thing. So I just wanted to put a couple other ideas in, since we seem to be going very much on, you know, grandfathering as a notion that's attached to this, as opposed to grandfathering perhaps being a separate issue that needs to be looked at in its own complexity. Thanks.
Thank you, Aubrey. This is Sarah Bakke again, for the record. I see Donna is typing in the chat. While we wait, is there anyone else who has any comments, like to raise their hand? Not seeing any. Okay, we've got about, looks like 13 minutes left of this call. Do we have any further comments regarding the RSP program? I see a comment from Donna saying at Aubrey, as I see it and how I read this document, we are really only discussing a pre-approval process. And if that does not change substantively from what was undertaken in 2012, I don't see why 2012 RSPs could not be grandfathered in. I see Donna's typing again, as well as Jeff. I'll give them a moment to get their comments in. Maybe while we wait, Jeff has stated, perhaps the grandfathering applies to what is the same with perhaps some lesser amount of evaluation, or only those new requirements, if any. Okay, I'm not seeing any other comments. Krista, do you have anything to add regarding this item, or do you want to move on to the costing at this point? And then we only have about 12 minutes left.
Hi, sir. It's Krista for the record. I think it's clear that we need to go and spend significant more time on the document and fleshing all the other ideas. So I'm okay moving to the next topic, if everyone else is. You're quiet. Does that mean I should go ahead?
Sorry about that. I was waiting for the document to come up. If you would like to take over for costing, please go ahead.
Okay. It's Krista again for the record. So here's a first slide here is kind of same approach as the first part, where we're going back and we're kind of defining the problem and then raising up some points that we can hopefully flesh out some policy issues or help us define them a little bit more clearly or just as a basis for discussion. So pretty much for the costing, a couple lines here, recognizing that the 2012 round hasn't yet been concluded, but the cost for applying a TLD applies to be have greatly exceeded the actual cost. We know that there's a sizable surplus that still remains, and that's over and above any auction funds. So moving forward, we already had some discussions on this. So first of all, we have the holistic costing, and we were discussing on what kind of basis we should be using for that. Is it one or more rounds, quote-unquote, or is it the number of applications, or is it some other methodology? And I guess we're looking for some ideas or suggestions if there's something else in there, what makes the most sense. So maybe I'll go through the slide and then I'll break for a second because in the interest of time, we don't have a lot here. Secondly, we had a bunch of conversations on the floor versus the cost method. And they're kind of conflicting, which you're going to see in a minute here, but we decided that the floor is the minimum price. We have a valuable piece of the internet here, but we don't also want it to be below a certain threshold. So we need to figure out how those align with the costing method. Because if the costing method is X and the floor is Y, we're going to have a gap in there, and therefore it leads us to the excess consideration, which is what should be done with those excess funds. We know that they could be there, but so far we haven't come up with any ideas on the application of them other than saying ICANN is a not-for-profit, and even though the costing method and the set of books are segregated, doesn't mean that those funds can't be used in another program within ICANN. But is there something else that we would like to use those funds for, or are we just going to say any access simply goes there? Does anyone have any comments on that so far, or should I quickly go to the next slide and then we can hopefully think about it for the next call or even for comments after this? No comments, so I'm just going to jump to the next slide really quickly here. So as I was mentioning, on the accounting side, we're talking about a separate set of books. So we know that the application program is a separate set of books. However, we deal with the access is totally different. But the basis is it's a break-even. Sorry, I think I have holistic in here twice. My apologies. Oh, and we have floor and cost in here. Sorry, I must have done this quickly. But and I thought that was weird. So raising one other point on the floor versus cost is that there was an assumption that having a floor price would also help reduce the failure rates and impact on the security and stability and abuse. And we did discuss what the pros and cons are of that and what we're afraid of, and whether or not that still remains true. And then another aspect which we've yet to flesh out is the different fees by application type. And currently we have it so that if we base it on a certain threshold, we haven't discussed what that threshold might be, then would there be a different application fees by type? So we need to determine what is that threshold that we would want those different applications and respective fees to be? And again, I have access. I don't get it. So I guess in the interest of time, maybe I'll just open that up for now to see if there's any feedback that we can include in there, or so we can begin to hash out some of the policy issues around that. Aubrey, I see you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
I do. This is Aubrey speaking. And perhaps I'm thinking about all this very simplistically, as I'm sure happens a lot. But if we have something that looks like a rolling process, and we have something that says that this should be self-funding, et cetera, the third assumption I would add is that any pricing, even within a rolling operation, would be revisited from time to time. So basically, if we're looking at this in that way, then those, and we're not talking about any past funds, we're talking about this and going forward, that if any excess funds were always plowed back into this self-funding process and considered while the next pricing activity was occurring, it could take care of itself and sort of meet the separate requirements. But I say maybe I'm missing something and I'm looking at it too simplistically. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. I don't think you are. The question is how about we would go about that allocation? Before we were talking about systems. So are we going to say that the system, you know, we're going to allocate X amount towards a system because we kind of know what that cost is today based on our needs for tomorrow. But how far do we go forward, and then are there other aspects in there that we should consider beyond, say, a new system? And how do we do that? And do we say it's more than one round or two rounds or three rounds or the number of applications or is there some other basis? But I agree with you, it should be done on a periodic basis, whatever that might be. And I'm assuming it's rounds, but again, it needs to be fleshed out. Donna, please go ahead.
Thanks, Krista. I think, there's a number of dependencies that come into the costing question, which creates some challenges, certainly in my mind, to sort this through. And one of the things that I don't know that we've discussed in this group is the roots, and I've got the wrong terminology for this, but the CDAR report, where one of the recommendations is that the controlled, I can't think of the terminology, but basically that they maintain the controlled, that the recommendation is that you maintain the controlled rate of delegation, I think is the term, similar to what happened in the 2012 round. And I think the 2012 round was based on an arbitrary number of 1,000 delegations per year. So what happens if that recommendation is, I don't even know who is supposed to look at that CDAR report and who can actually say, you know, whether they're agreeing to the recommendations or not. But if that rate of delegation stays in place for, you know, no more than a 1,012-month period, what impact does that have on costing? Because to some extent, you're almost talking about a more valuable resource in some respects, because if we know that there's a, we can only delegate 1,000 of these in a 12-month period, and we get, you know, in excess of 1,000 applications in the first subsequent procedure round, then that puts pressure on how we're going to decide who gets delegated first. But I would also think it has the potential to drive up the cost of an application as well. So I find this costing thing hard, and I know you've tried to work through this. Because I think it's contingent on so many other assumptions and conversations that we haven't really finalized. I mean, even, you know, types of categories and things like that, and whether we're going to have a round or whether we'll have one round and then it will just be an open window so people can submit applications at will. So I guess I get a little bit not nervous about this conversation, but it's hard for me to process it in my mind because I'm thinking about all the things that this conversation is contingent upon, so it's hard for me to process it. Thanks.
Thanks, Donna. The way I perceive it is that if we choose the policy to be on a cost basis, that means that if our costs are going to go up because our controlled delegation maximum is increasing. Therefore, we should have it should be covered in that cost no matter what. The actual demand aspect of it is something, I think, completely different, but we're still, it comes back down to, I think, our policy on costing and whether or not we want to do cost plus or if, you know, maybe that impacts our floor versus something else. But I think that's kind of the way I see it, and we need to be able to say if we agree that it's cost, then this is what some, you know, what the implications would be versus perhaps something else. But good feedback, and we'll, I guess, work on that a little bit further for next call. I see some chat on number of applications with 25,000, et cetera, et cetera. We'll maybe try to work those on, in on the next call, and I know it's probably super late for most of us, and I want to be respectful of everyone's time. So it's 9 o'clock. We do have another call on May 16th at 1500 UTC, which should be earlier for most of us. But, Sarah, would you like to add anything?
No, I believe I'm good.
Okay, with that, many thank yous to everyone and their time, and I guess we can stop the recording, and we'll see you on May 16th. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has